God is love, and He created you and me to love us. He wants a relationship with us. That's what He wants. And since He created us to love us, He created us with a need for love. See, that's why you're sitting out there needing love. If you didn't need love, you wouldn't need God. Did you ever think of that? This is why you need God. You need love 24 hours a day. If you wake up at 2 a.m. and somehow you know you are not a loved person, it's going to drive you up the wall. And you need to love yourself. You go to bed tonight at 11 o'clock and you cannot love yourself because of something that's happened today or something or other, it's going to drive you up the wall. You have to love yourself. Okay? I'm going to call that acceptance. I need love. I need acceptance. Now, what I'm basically going to be doing this morning is talking about how your particular unique version of the flesh got organized. You know, the scriptures speak of walking in the spirit versus after the flesh. And walking after the flesh isn't just getting drunk on Saturday night and chasing women when you go to the convention and so forth. All of that qualifies as walking after the flesh. But walking after the flesh simply means walking in the same old patterns that were carefully orchestrated and programmed into you in the world before you got saved. And then walking in your carnal Christianity after you got saved. And that's what it means to walk after the flesh, if I understand Scripture correctly. So with many of us here in this room, our particular version of the flesh isn't chasing women on Saturday night. Maybe we've got that one whipped. But maybe our particular version of the flesh is being a workaholic, just having to work all the time, just being a driven person. Or maybe my particular version of the flesh is I just can't get going. I'm just not a self-motivator, and I'm just lazy, and I just can't get going, you see. I wasn't born this way, and you weren't born a workaholic. We got programmed here on planet Earth, all right? So this is what I'm talking about. So we've got several hundred different versions of flesh in here this morning. And we're going to be talking about how it got choreographed into you by the devil. And then later on in the seminar, how to let the Spirit live through me to walk in the Spirit instead of after the flesh. Now then, what kind of flesh then do you have? What happened to you along the way? Was your dad a very quiet kind of a person? He just never said anything? And so consequently, there just wasn't much interaction going on between you and your dad. Maybe he was gone all the time. Maybe he was a salesman. He was gone, or a truck driver. He only got in, you know, just a few days out of the month. And so he was just an absentee father. Or maybe he was living at home, but he worked all the time. He just never was home. He was just always coming in real late, and he just never had any relationship with him. Maybe he was a perfectionist. Everything he did had to be perfect. Everything. He just tried to perform perfectly at all times. Now, if this is the case, these different kinds of things are going to have had a profound effect on you as you were growing up in that home. How about Mama? Maybe she was a very critical person. She just seemed to follow you around, telling you how you were blowing it all the time. Just on your case, continuous. You had that red pencil out, just always checking. Check, 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 check. You know, wrong again, Susie, and so forth. This will have had a profound effect on you at this point in time. Maybe you were the favorite child. You were just Miss Wonderful, and she just made a doormat out of herself for you, and you were the one who was Miss Wonderful in the home. And this is going to have a profound effect on you at this point. Maybe you suffered a lot of peer rejection. You were the last one chosen on the spelling team. You were chosen next to last at softball. You weren't invited to the parties and this kind of stuff. And you experienced a lot of peer rejection. All of these things are going to be factors in choreographing into you what I'm going to call the flesh. Now then, when you came to planet Earth, you didn't know sikkim about God, but you did have this need, didn't you? So where did you start trying to get love? Where, gang? Where, gang? From mom and dad, right? You began to try to milk it out of mom and dad. Now, you were either basically successful or basically unsuccessful. If you were basically successful, you learned performance techniques to employ to get love out of these people, see? And then you got hooked on it like a heroin addict. And now you're still using these same techniques to try to generate self-acceptance. You've got yourself now hooked on this. If you got rejected, then your lifestyle was built around rejection, and you grew up feeling like a reject. And at this point in time, if you're walking after the flesh, you're rejecting yourself at this point in time. Now, little kids are the most self-centered critters on planet Earth. There's nothing more self-centered than a kid. He thinks only of number one. So he's got a wet diaper at age 9 months. And he does not think, well, no, I shouldn't cry and wake mom up because after all, she needs her sleep. He thinks only of number one. See, get out of the rack, get in here. Number one's got a problem, take care of it. See, he thinks only of number one. All right, now this is going to backfire on him. Because a little kid learns about himself from all of the feedback he gets from other people. He learns only about himself. So here's a baby, and I'm the daddy, and I say, nose, nose. Now he's not learning, well, how interesting, dad has a nose. So he's learning, I've got a nose, and it looks like that. See, that's what he's learning. See? Completely self-centered. All right, let's take a little kid and let's name him Charlie. And let's say that he showed up when his mom and dad were juniors in high school, which was kind of embarrassing because they weren't married. And so they had to get married because of Charlie's imminent arrival. So he shows up now, and he's not a very welcome guest at this point. He just ruined everything. Daddy wanted to be an airline pilot. He had his goal set there. He built model airplanes since he was 6 years old. But now, instead of being at the Spartan School of Aeronautics, you know, going on toward his goal, he works at the Dairy Queen. You know, he makes 65 a week. All of his friends have dirt bikes, and boy, they just zoom around on weekends. He can't get one because he can't buy one. He's got him an old used car that won't run half the time. He is frustrated and angry at this low blow that he's been dealt. Now, the little mama wanted to be a sorority girl. She was going to go over here to Columbia and be in a sorority over there and wear that pin around. You know, her mother was in that sorority. In fact, she still wears her pin on homecoming, you know, whether she goes to the game or not. And so this gal was going to go and be like mama. But now, instead of that, why, she's working in the Kentucky Fried Chicken place. And all of her friends come home on weekends from the university. Oh, they look pretty. Man, the clothes they wear. And they're dating those fancy guys over there. Oh, they have such wonderful stories. And here she is. She still wears her old high school clothes, you know. And she split them up the side and everything, try to make them look, you know, modern. But, you know, you can tell by looking that they're just made over. Sex to her, instead of being a romantic, wonderful, exciting thing to look forward to, it's more of an obligation than anything else. Really, it's kind of similar to cooking more chicken. This is just kind of the way she looks at it. You know, just one more thing I've got to do, you know, before I can have some time to myself. You know, that's sorry, no good, ruined my life. This is kind of the mentality that she's got. And so they just fight like cats and dogs all the time. These are ulcer givers. They're not ulcer getters. They dish it out on each other, see. And so they have a hot war going on. And it goes on day and night. Now, right at the height of the war, which is every day, one of them will spin on little Charlie and blame him for the situation. Now, Charlie's 3 years old now. He's sitting over here playing with his cars, and here's what he gets. It's all your fault. If it weren't for you, I wouldn't be married to this old bat. You hear that plane going over? You hear it? Thanks to you, I'll never be in one of those. And he storms out of the house and slams the door. Now, what's little Charlie learning? Now, wait a minute, Dad. Let's be reasonable about this thing. No. Remember who little kids learn about? They learn about number one. Here's what he learns. It's my fault that Mom and Dad are so miserable and unhappy. If it weren't for me, they'd be happy. I'm the problem, you see. Now, I really do need love and acceptance, Dad, Mom. I need it. But I really don't blame you for not loving me, because I wouldn't love me either. Sorry, no good rat like I am. In fact, if anybody ever did love me, I wouldn't really believe it. You know, probably Christians or something. Christians are supposed to love people, aren't they, Dave? Do you see what I'm saying? Now, he can't verbalize all this, but it's all coming through at the gut level, see? I'm responsible for all the misery in the world, because this house represents the world to him. So it's his fault that the world is in such a state of unhappiness. Do you get the picture? This is what this kid learns. Now then, you've got a mind and you've got emotions. My right hand represents your mind, my left hand your emotions. You've got a thinker and a feeler. Your feeler reacts to your thinker. Whatever you set your mind on, your emotions react accordingly. So let's say there's a rattlesnake down here getting ready to bite me on the leg. So in my mind, I believe I'm in great danger. That's 10. Now then I quickly feel terrified, and that's 10. Now then I look down and I see the snake is made out of rubber. So there's no cause for fear at all, right? I get the message in my mind. Boom. It goes back down to 1. You know, no cause for fear. But how about my feeler? It doesn't get the message. It gets the message all right, but it goes down, you know, like a BB sinking in oil or something. It takes it 30 minutes to get down to the bottom, doesn't it? So about 15 minutes later, it gets down to about a 6. I open a drawer, a spider runs up my sleeve. Boom, everything back to 10 again. What if I live in a home with spiders and rattlesnakes? Only they're my mom and dad, see, or my older brother or whatever, see. Then here I am sitting up here 10-10, and my mind goes down to 1, and my emotions start down, and then boom, everything back to 10 again. Mind down to 1, feeler starts down, boom, everything back to 10 again. Look in on me when I'm about 5 years old, and my feeler is bottoming out at a 7, or a 6, or whatever I said. It's been so long since I've been below 6, I don't even know 5-4-3-2-1 exists. I have taken my 10-point Richter scale and I've compressed it into 4. You see that? I call 6 1, Dave. That's normal for me, you see. So I'm sitting, 6 is my best time. Do you see that? And so, do you see then that if an episode occurred that could instill fear into me about 5 points worth, instead of going from 1 up to 6, I start at 6, man, and I try to go to 11. Well, you can't go to 11. You can only go to 10. So the circuit breakers trip. See, the fuse is blow. And so I'm sitting over here falling apart in a situation where somebody else over here is only going up to 6. Well, hey, 6, man, that's my best shot, Dave, is when I'm at 6. You see that? So somebody's sitting here saying, well, Bill, that really is interesting. I never thought about it quite like that. I just thank God that I didn't have fear like that when I was a kid, because I can't identify what you're saying at all. Well, that's super, brother. I'm glad. But I just used the illustration of one emotion, fear. Do you not see that I could plug any emotion you want to name into this little model? And everybody in here sitting here stuck at various levels on various emotions. See, here's a man that comes in my office. He said, boy, Bill, my wife is just so controlled by her emotions. I tell you, she just falls apart. We try to talk. She just starts to cry. And I wish you could help her learn to walk by faith, Bill. She walks by feel. So I begin to talk to her. Sure enough, the guy's right. And she walks by feel all right. But about 3 weeks later, I see this same guy at church. And so I want to demonstrate love to him. So I go up to him and try to hug him. And hey, Dave, it's like he tries to do a back flip. You know, when I get up to him, it's like trying to hug that microphone. You know, he just stands off. Or I hear that his little daughter got pregnant. She's only 15. And I go to him to try to, in compassion, minister to him as the scriptures admonish me to. This guy will not let me. I try to bring up the subject. And he sees where I'm going ahead of time, and he wants to talk about Iran. Or he wants to talk about the recession we're in or something. He will not let me bring up this emotionally loaded topic. I submit to you, here's a man who is just as controlled by his emotions as his wife is. Do you see that? It's inhibition. That's an emotion. So let's say you're sitting in here, lady, and you're feeling inferior at level 7. You just walk around feeling inferior at 7 all the time. You only got 3 points left on your Richter scale, all right? So let's say you walk in and everybody's got on a new dress in your row except you. Would that be enough to make any woman go up a couple points on feeling inferior? Would it or wouldn't it? Now, come on. Sure it would. Is that kind of normal for walking up planet Earth? Sure. But sweet thing, you don't go from 1 to 3. You go from 7 to 9, see? So you're sitting there and you tried to turn the hymn book page and you tore it halfway through. You know, this kind of stuff, see? You trip over your own shoelaces, you know, trying to get out of the... You name the emotion, and everybody in here is stuck at various thresholds of any emotion you want to name. And Satan will control you by putting thoughts into your mind to correlate with how you feel. And he'll have you walking by feel, and you'll think you're walking by faith. Your faith is in your mind, gang. It's not in your emotions. It is never a feeling. Sure, I feel the presence of the Holy Spirit sometimes. And that's super. That's a fringe benefit. But most of the time, I do not feel the presence of God. I walk by believing, not by feeling. Okay, now then, you've got memory banks. And these memory banks are in the brain. So that's supposed to represent the brain there, that wedge-shaped piece of pie. And the memory banks are like the First National Bank, only instead of holding money, they hold memories. Memories of experiences. And then you've got memory traces burned through your memory banks. And these are patterns of how you think, how you feel, and how you perform, how you act. And the more you repeat these patterns, the stronger they become. So they're like highways. The more you drive on them, the wider they get. So here's somebody, 6-lane highway for being a very strong-willed, domineering person. Here's somebody else's 6-lane highway in here for being very passive and submissive. He's anybody's dog that'll hunt with him. Now, I'll do whatever you want to do. Just give me a few strokes here. Now, here's somebody else's pattern for going by her emotions. She's just strictly controlled by her emotions. If she feels like everybody in here is rejecting her, then it's the truth. She believes it, see? She's controlled by her emotions. Here's somebody else, green highway, for feeling inadequate. I just feel inadequate. I just feel like I can't do anything right, see? And so you're sitting in here and you've got 562 of these highways up there in that computer between your ears. Some of them are 8 lanes wide, complete with cyclone fences and overpasses so traffic can flow unimpeded, see? And some of them are just 2 lanes and some of them are just coon trails, I guess, you know. But you're just trained like a bird dog sitting out there. You really are. You put toothpaste on the same end of the toothbrush every time. You shove it the same side of your mouth every time. You're absolutely trained like a bird dog. Now, God wants us to be transformed by the renewing of our minds. He commands us to be transformed by the renewing of our minds. All right. Applying this to Charlie now. If little Charlie doesn't get love at home, then he believes that he is unlovely. Now, if he believes he's unlovely long enough, how's he going to feel by the time he's 5 years old? He's going to feel unlovely. If he's being rejected at home, how is he going to feel by the time he's 5 years old? He's going to feel rejected. He's going to be stuck, see? If he believes that he is worthless, how's he going to feel? Worthless. If he believes he's basically an ugly, yucky, unpopular kind of a person, how's he going to feel? Exactly the same way. If he believes that he's responsible for all the problems in the home, if he were just gone, everybody'd be happy. If he believes that, how's he going to feel? He's going to feel guilty just for living there, isn't he? Is he guilty? Yes or no, gang? Not guilty of anything. That is false guilt. And you mark it. That is one of Satan's most effective weapons. False guilt. Now, false guilt and valid guilt feel exactly the same way. Exactly. There's no difference. So let's illustrate. Let's say that I feel guilty because I'm contemplating cheating on my income tax this April. I've pretty much made up my mind that's what I'm going to do, and I have a guilty feeling about that. Is that valid guilt or is that false guilt? That's valid guilt, right? Because how do I know? Because God's Word says so, right? Okay, so that is coming through the Spirit to the soul, soul being the personality. And I feel this guilt. Now then, let's take another one. Let's say that there is a woman in here. She's born again, but she had an abortion 5 years ago. And she confessed this to the Lord, and it's under the blood of Christ, everything, right? If we tried to ask God about it, he'd say, what abortion? It's over. But she's just sitting here this morning feeling guilty. Just feeling that way over that episode 5 years ago. Is that false guilt or is that valid guilt? False guilt. False guilt comes from the devil working through the flesh to the soul or personality. You see the difference now? We'll be drawing pictures of it here later on in the seminar. So little Charlie then builds a life here in his memory traces. He builds a life of non-love. He builds his life around rejection. Now he desperately wants love, but if he ever gets it, he's like a dog chasing a car that finally catches it. What do I do with it? See, because he's never really lived with love before. And so he can't handle it. And the closer it gets to him, he will begin to test it. He'll do things to see if it's real. See, she doesn't really love me. And sure enough, if she jilts him and goes with somebody else or something, it's like everything falls into sync inside this guy. I knew it. I knew she didn't love me all the time. She was just pulling my leg. He's always testing love. Because he can't believe it's real. Because he can't believe anybody would ever love him. Because he's so basically unlovely. You see. Or he will deliberately do things to make it go away. I've counseled with women who have had affairs because their husbands were just pouring the love on and just being so gentle and kind and loving to them, and they felt so worthless and unworthy of this love, they go out and have an affair to stop the guy. To make him quit loving them. And yet they hate that. Born again, I'm talking about Christian women, Dave. Hate it. Wish that they were different. See, it's the flesh. It's their unique version of the flesh. Or here's another person who was severely rejected as a child. And if he ever does get love, he just leaps on with both arms and he just tries to suck the life out of this love object. Just, you know, don't leave me. You know, you're going to the grocery store? Here, I'll go with you. Going to the bathroom? Let me carry your toothbrush. just won't ever let this person get away. Haven't you encountered people like this? You know, you speak to them on the street, you know, and then here they are at 1 o'clock with all four kids, you know. Thought I'd come over and spend the afternoon. And here they are at 11 o'clock at night, you know. and still sitting there. Haven't we had a great day? You know, see you tomorrow at 7. You know, this kind of thing, see. And this is not Christian. This is the flesh. This is a person sucking the life out of you. And if you watch, Satan will really use that number on you if you're the recipient of this sucking routine. Because Satan will begin to pile a guilt on you when you get unhappy about this situation and unwilling to keep on letting this gal show up at 7 a.m. every morning. Man, that's a false guilt trip. Okay, now there are many, many ways that you can reject a child. You don't have to do it the way it was with Charlie. You can just give no physical love to your kid. Just never rock him, never hug him. Never be physically tender to him. Don't tell him that you love him. Just let him guess at all this stuff. And he'll guess all right, because Satan will be controlling the guessing game. And what he'll learn is, I am unlovely. I am an unlovely person. Just ignore this kid. It doesn't make any difference how you ignore him. You can ignore him by being a workaholic and just never being there. You can ignore him by being a drunk and just lying in the gutter all night. Or you can ignore him by being a preacher and being out soul winning every night. It really doesn't make any difference how you ignore the kid. See, the message is going to come through exactly the same. Little children spell love T-I-M-E. Spend time with me, Dad. So, Dad, if you don't spend any time with me, then whatever you do spend your time with is worth more to you than I am. Therefore, I'm worth less than that is. Therefore, I'm worthless. Now, if I believe I'm worthless, how am I going to begin to feel? Worthless. And there are people sitting here this morning feeling worthless at about level 8. You're just stuck feeling that way. Or you can just be a perfectionist. Just everything has to be perfect in your house. Everything has to be done perfectly. Or you can be critical and always on your kid's case. Just always coming along with a better idea. You're like the Ford Motor Company. You know, got a better plan. And just continually monitoring him. And the kid will grow up feeling inadequate. He just feels like he just can't hack it. He just cannot perform well. Or you can indulge your kid. Just don't ever discipline him. Don't ever check him. And I think this is something that's really rampant today, because we have so many working mothers. And they get home at 5:30 and they feel guilty because they've been away from this kid all day. And they don't want to make the kid be alienated. And so they just don't check him. They don't spank him. They don't stop him. And we wind up with a 3-year-old as the head of the house. He's the one that's running the place, you see. And what you do is you grow a person up with unbridled flesh. Just an unchecked will. He doesn't submit to anybody, you see. And I see this just becoming rampant in our society today. One of the ones that I see, especially in Christian circles, is the overprotection syndrome. Chuck Solomon's got this story that he tells about a baby fox, which I think really illustrates the point. Here's this baby fox that's orphaned, and you find him out in the boonies. He's 2 weeks old, so you take him home, and you nurse him with milk, and then you wean him and put him on dog food. You teach him how to push a button with his nose and keep a bowl full of water. Let him sleep with you, red ribbon around the neck, vitamins, veterinarians. And so after about 2 years, you've got the most beautiful fox in St. Louis County, or whatever the name of this county is. And you say, oh, gee, Foxy, it's just, heartbreaking now for me to have to do this, but I'm going to have to release you because you're a wild creature, and I've got to let you get out and get in on some of the fringe benefits of fox adult life. And so you take him out in the boonies, take the ribbon off, kiss him goodbye, let him out of the car, and drive away. Now, as you're driving down the road, this is what your mental set is. Oh, how I love that fox. You can't bear to look in the mirror because there he is still in the middle of the road. Oh, it hurts so bad. But Lord, I did the very best I could for that fox. Why? I have poured my life into that fox for 2 years. I surely hope he appreciates all I've done for him. Makes me feel real good to know the sacrifices I've made for that precious, precious animal. I remember the time that I gave up my Easter outfit so he could fix his broken leg, you know, at the vet. Cost me $71.50 to get it done. I was more than willing to do that because of my love. You know, feeling pretty good about herself. Let's look in on the fox. It's winter time when you let him out. It's going to get down to 5 degrees tonight. Now, this is the absolute worst night he's ever spent in his life. He curls up in a ball out of instinct. You know, but in the morning, he can hardly get out of the ball. He's just nearly frozen solid. But he manages to struggle out. He's hungry. He's weak. He's thirsty. Something little runs by that he's supposed to eat. But he thinks that's a plaything. He's looking for his dog food. You know, he didn't have time to play. And he's thirsty. He doesn't know there's a spring over the hill over there about a mile and a half. He's looking for buttons to push. Now, what's going to happen to this fox within 2 weeks' time? He's going to be deader than a hammer. Now you killed him just as sure as if you shot him through the head with a .22. You killed him with what you called love. It wasn't love at all. You kept him from becoming a fox, see? Physically, you got the most beautiful fox in St. Louis County. Emotionally, you got a moron. He doesn't know how to fox, man. Now, people do exactly the same thing with children, and I think it's worse in Christianity than in other places. They're so afraid that something's going to happen to their kids out there that they just smother them, see, and overprotect them. They make all the decisions for them, tell them how to look, how to stand, how to dress, how to wear the hair, all of these things, you know, no, we do, you know, this is the way we do it, and they make all these decisions for them. And then I see them do this too. Once they get out from under the home, then they send them off 4 years to a school where substitute parents can take over. And now the girls can't walk closer than 6 inches to the boys. And we're going to give them demerits if we catch them with a scrap of paper in their wastebasket, you know, at inspection time. And all of this stuff, see, doing all the thinking for them. And then when they're 21, okay, now son, I've done the very best I could for you. It's time for you to marry and go out there and raise a family. And yes, Dad. And they go and they do it. And they go, they crash and burn. See? They don't know how to people, man. See? Physically, they look just like everybody else. Emotionally, they're wiped out inside. And so they're on the telephone calling back home, Mother, what do you think I ought to do? And resenting their weakness, you see. Resenting having to call and having to be so tied. And so, since Mama and Daddy were such warm, wonderful, loving people, the fact that I would have resentment toward them, I resent you, Mom and Dad, for what you did to me. I love you for all you've done for me. But the fact that I can have resentment for such wonderful people just proves what a sorry, no good person I am, Dave. You see? And so look how Satan will use this number then to wipe out young Christians. I get them in my office before this has happened to them. But I think probably the biggest thing that I see going on here on planet Earth, I think Satan's best weapon here on planet Earth is this little number. Performance and physical appearance. The feedback you're going to get from other people here on planet Earth is going to be based on those two items right there. How you act and how you look. Now watch yourself at the grocery store. Here's this cute little kid, 3 years old, who smiles and winks at you. Clever, smiling, winking performance, cute appearance. What are you going to do? You're going to pay him off with love. You're going to smile and wink back, see? Now, what does this little kid learn? My, what a wonderful lady, huh? The kid learns, I'm lovely. I love myself. Remember? Self-centered. Now, here's this snotty-nosed little kid with rotten teeth who spits on your pickup door at the 7-Eleven. Now, what are you going to do with him? You're going to withhold love from him, see? Now, what does he learn? What a cranky old bat. No? No. He learns that later, see? What he learns now is, I'm yucky. I hate myself. All self-centered. See that? Now then, as we get a little older, especially males, Let's throw that one in there. Achievement. What have I achieved here on planet Earth? How many plaques do I have on my wall? How many honors have I won? How many degrees do I have? How big is my car? Is my church growing, Dave? You know, these kinds, you know, don't they play this game, you know, when they get together? You know, it's satanic, man, the way that Satan will use this thing to take perfectly good things like church growth and get us to tie ourselves to that to generate self-acceptance, self-love. And Dave said he'd already shared that with you Wednesday night. So this business of how pretty is my wife, see? How new is my car? My neck choker chain is wider than yours is. You know, playing the game, man, here on planet Earth. It's just a big trip, is what it is. All right, so people like Farrah Fawcett and Cheryl Teagues and Burt Reynolds and those people, they have pretty earth suits. And because of their pretty earth suits, they don't have to do anything. Just walk down the street and people invite them to go play golf or come over and play bridge or something. They get all the acceptance they can handle just on the basis of their pretty earth suits. Isn't that right? Now, guys like Don Rickles, they'd go bankrupt if they tried to make it like this, right? There's no demand for round, bald earth suits these days. So they have to opt for some other way of milking acceptance out of the world. And Don Rickles has done it through cleverness. See, he can perform. That doesn't mean TV performer, but just dropping one-liners and cleverness and making people laugh. How many people want him around? They want him around all the time, don't they? Come to our party, Don. Make us laugh. You know, we love you, Don, you know, and so forth. They must have Rickles for president stickers out and so forth. Now then, guys like Howard Hughes must have been a terribly rejected child. I've never read his child history, but I know it without even looking at it. The guy was a reject because he had completely X'd people out. Couldn't care less how he acted. Couldn't care less what he looked like. He sat up here in a hotel penthouse and played solitaire all alone, playing Monopoly with real hotels. See, I've built the biggest airplane that was ever built, you know, and all the other people out there, too bad, they lose. You know, all he is president of the bank. Tough, I win again. See, just playing the game all alone. And the poor guy dies in his own Learjet, and everybody says, ain't that living? Boy, if I could just go out like that. That's the world, man. That's the world. How absolutely heartbreaking. So, we come up then with what I'm going to call performance-based acceptance, which goes like this. If you perform well enough, kid, I'll pay you off with love. I will love you. I'll give you a return on your investment. Now, kid, I know that you're hung up on carrots, and I've got this carrot on a stick. It's the love carrot. And by the way, I also know that I've got the market cornered on carrots, as far as you're concerned, because I'm your dad, or I'm your mother, you see. And now, if you perform for me, I'll give you a bite out of my carrot every once in a while. And so this kid then, if the payoff is great enough, he keeps on pursuing the carrot. On the other hand, if dad is running too fast down the road with the carrot, a lot of kids just see the distance spreading there. In other words, dad's standards are so high, I just can't ever make it with this guy. And they just quit and go the other direction. Just give up. They go to the peer group. They can buy acceptance a lot cheaper over there in the peer group than they can from mom and dad. You see how this is working? Now, Annabelle and I have got four boys. One of them is named Wade. Let me show you how subtle this performance-based acceptance garbage can be. Let's say that we catch Wade lying to us. Now, watch me blow it. All right, Wade Gillen, you lied to me. Performance. Now, if there's one thing I can't stand, it's a liar. Uh-oh. Performer. See, I'm switching from performance to performer. Now, Wade, your mother can't stand liars either. In fact, we got married. We vowed we'd never tolerate a liar living in this house. And it looks like to me we've got our first liar. And God can't stand liars either. All liars shall have their part in hell of fire. Now, it's better if you use the King James when you talk to your children when you're mad. But it sounds more like God. Okay? Really punch him out. I'm going to make him feel lost even though he's born again. All right? Because, see, I'll really control him. You know, I'll really strap this guilt on him. Now, I'll show you what we do to liars in this house, boy. We spank them. You get in that bedroom, you liar. And I spank him. This is really blowing it. Because, see, it's going to come first into Wade's mind, and then it's going to get stuck in his emotions. I just feel like Dad can't stand me because of the way I act. And I just feel like Mom can't stand me. She can't stand to have me around because of the way I act. And I feel like God's the same way. Oh, I see that John 3:16 stuff. I see that, but I just don't feel it. I just feel like God, you know, I can't get close to God. And I really don't blame any of the one of the three of them because I really can't stand me either because of the way I act. I don't like myself. You see how that can happen? That's Satan, brothers and sisters. Satan. Now let me show you how to do it right. All right, Wade Gillum, you lied to me. Performance. Now, if there's one thing I cannot stand, it's lying. Performance. And your mother can't stand lying either. In fact, when we got married, we vowed we'd never tolerate lying by any of our children. And we haven't yet. And God can't stand lying either. Can't stand it. Now, have I talked about Wade? I have not said one word about Wade. I'm talking about his performance, not his character. Now, Wade, if I didn't love you, I'd let you go right ahead and lie. I'd let you get you a 6-lane highway going for lying. To manipulate people to get your needs met. But because I love you, I'm going to help you with your problem. Now you get in that bedroom. I'm going to spank you for lying. Now if I rear Wade this way, he gets the message in his mind and ultimately over in his emotions. I just feel like Dad can't stand the way I act sometimes, but boy, there's no question in my mind he loves me. I feel like Mom can't stand the way I act sometimes, but boy, she loves me. God's the same way, and I'm the same way. I love me. I realize I don't perform well sometimes, but I love me. Now then, I want to go ahead and pursue this performance-based acceptance routine a little bit, and I want to use the public schools to demonstrate my point. Don't hear me talking about the public schools. Public schools are part of the world, gang. They weren't handed down from Mount Sinai. And the Lord is going to use the schools where he can, and Satan is going to use the schools where he can. And it just so happens that the public schools are a very fertile soil for this performance-based acceptance routine to take place. First of all, let's establish something about little kids. Kids are not miniature adults. A little kid is a little kid, period. And they are weird. They are not like us. All right? Let me illustrate how weird they are. Now, I'm not talking about kids. We were all kids ourselves one time. But let me tell you how weird a kid is. My background, I'm a psychology professor. I resigned my professorship, 6 years ago. But I ride a bike to work. So here I am riding my bike. And I see these two little kids walking down the street. They're about 7 or 8 years old. One of them's got on loafers, and the sole is open on it, like that. You know what tube socks are? Don't have any heel in them. He had on tube socks, and he had about 6 inches of sock hanging out the end of that shoe. See? And it was a wet day, and that sock is flopping around like this. It's wet, man. And he's just walking along oblivious to this, you know, and they're parting. And he says, see you later. And, okay, call me when you get home. And he goes off down the street, blah, 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 blah. And I'm watching this. Listen, I'll bet that old kid went home and watched cartoons or whatever, and it may have been after supper till he dealt with that situation. That is weird. Isn't it? Listen, if I've got a problem like that, I'm going to bring every resource I've got to bear to solve that problem immediately. And so will you. You can't handle that. This old kid, he's in another world. See? All right. Now let's send old Tube Sock to school, okay? Isn't he motivated to learn how to read? Isn't this going to be exciting? You know, he can hardly wait, right? Hardly wait to get home. Okay. All right, so here he is now. And we're going to educate this kid. Now, these are papers of one of my boys named Bill when he was in the first grade. He's a senior in high school now. And I want you to notice here now, he took six shots at it, and he got three right, and he got three wrong. Now, which ones does this teacher point out to him? He points out the wrong ones, see. And this is our whole mentality now, is we've got to point out everything people are doing wrong. When they correct it, then it only stands to reason they'll be doing it right, right? And so that seems very logical. Now, let's take him on through the year here. So here's another one a month or so later. And the first vowel is supposed to be marked long. The second vowel is supposed to be silent. He copied these off the board. And you can see that he got some right and he blew some. And she has given him an F, which he doesn't know what that means. I mean, what's Tube Sock know about A, B, C, D, F? See, what this means is you stuff this in the culvert on the way home, right? Which, he learned that the next year. I got these, I had to move fast to get these papers, see. Now, here's some work he's evidently copied off the board later in the year, and I want you to notice that she has discovered a severe case of the short lowercase e. What? Now look, wait a minute. Now what about that O right there? Isn't that a pretty good looking O? How about that S? Doesn't that look pretty good? Aren't we going to say something complimentary? Oh, no, Bill. Now, you don't understand education, son. We're stamping the ignorance out of this boy. We've got to point out the mistakes that he's making. Bill, any idiot knows you're supposed to do it right. You know, we don't need to comment about that. But you see, in this process, this kid's dauber's getting knocked down, see? He's getting pushed down into the mud. Here's one that isn't Bill, and there was a real paper, and I just copied it. The Kingdom of Fishmen, it's a 7-year-old kid. Once there was an underwater kingdom with lots and lots of fishmen. If anybody went in it, they would shoot them, and they would turn to ashes. Before they could find the treasure, the king would get the ashes to the brain and see the memories of the past. The end. Super intelligent kid. See? Really needs to be encouraged with such creativity, wouldn't you say? Here's the encouragement he got. This is very hard to read. To just quash this old kid. Now, let's move on. Here we have old Bill again, and the teacher is giving phonetic sounds like B, and he's to print the printed symbol that represents the sound. Well, the one I want to call your attention to is that one right there. She apparently had the letter K on her cue card, and she said K, and he writes the letter C, the hard C. Is he right? Yeah, he's right. Now, she can't check it wrong, see, but because he didn't put a K down, and there's no way on this earth that he can know that that's a K, because they both sound exactly alike, unless he's clairvoyant or doing tricks with mirrors or something, there's no way he can tell that she got a K on her card. But instead of saying, "Praise the Lord, Tube Sock, man, you got it right. I'm so proud of you, son." Instead of that, "Well, I reluctantly give you credit for this, but technically, you're not right. You know, you should have put a K down there. Any idiot knows, you know, that ought to be a K." You see what a quashing, cold water type thing this whole routine is. Now, to show you I got this gal pegged right, get this one. Here's math. 100, but messy. Too bad, son. It's messy. Now, let me show you how far you can carry this thing. Look at here. Here's 8 on the top and 3 on the bottom. That ought to be worth 2 points off. This one's dropped down too far, point off. These two are touching, point off. The pluses are too small, 2 points off. This one's dropped down. So you can carry this on, and you can just beat a person into the mud with this routine. Well, someone says, "Well, Bill, don't you ever have to tell a kid that he's doing something wrong? Or how would you do it right? How would you propose to change?" Well, the scriptures say that we should be basically like Barnabas. We should be encouragers. Just try to find the very best thing the old kid is doing and say something about it. See? Hey, good going. Yay, wow, good. See? Encourage the old kid. And do the same thing with your wife, you see. Well, but Bill, you can't just do this all the time. There are bound to be times that come up when you have to say that they're doing something wrong and show them where they can correct course. I'll agree with that, brother and sister. But you earn the privilege to do it. Good, good, beautiful, good. By the way, now, Charlie, your lowercase b's are too short. You need to raise them up some. What do you think this kid would do tomorrow? What do you think he'd do tomorrow? Man, he would respond. He would respond to that encouragement and to that love. Would he not? All right, I want to ask you something, gang. Some of you in here, your emotions are on a performance-based self-acceptance. You just got yourself on a performance-based acceptance. You got your wife on a performance-based acceptance. You got your kids on a performance basis. You're sitting in here and it's more of a feeling than anything else. You just feel this way. Let me ask you a question. How much does God accept you right now? Where you are, if you're in Christ, if you're born again. On a 1 to 10, how much does God accept you? It's a 10, see? He doesn't operate on a performance-based acceptance. He operates on a Jesus-based acceptance. He grades pass-fail. He doesn't grade 1 to 10. It's like taking a driver's test. If you're in Christ, you pass. You are accepted. If you're not in Christ, you flunk. You are rejected by God. Performance has nothing whatever to do with it. Performance has to do with approval, with earning God's approval. And it is performance-based. And we're going to be talking about that later. So you have to earn God's approval through performance by letting Christ live through you. But you cannot earn God's acceptance. It is free in Christ Jesus. All right. I want you to think about a certain number as you're sitting there. I want you to put a number on how well you accept you sitting here right now, just like you are, if you're born again. Put a number on how well you accept yourself. All right, let's say that you've given yourself a 4. Now, God gives you a 10. He has accepted you perfectly. He either grades 10 or he grades 1. He doesn't go 1 through 10 like you do. See? So if God has accepted you perfectly, but you have only accepted you at level 4 because of all of the emotions and so forth have been programmed through this process I've been talking about. From your worldly viewpoint, you've still got 6 notches to go before you can ever accept yourself as well as God accepts you. Therefore, you've got higher standards than God's got for accepting yourself. And that, dear brother and sister, is the flesh.